Hello, friends, and welcome back to the next episode of I'm Like Anime. So a weekly anime talk show. We talk about the latest anime, weigh in, see what's hot, see what's not. My name's George, and with me, as always, is Tony.
Tony!
Whoa, coming in hot.
Tony.
Tony has been turned into a Pokemon by an evil wizard.
Tony.
So I'm just going to have to ad-lib about, so I'm a spider, so what? Because I'm not watching.
Tony!
It was very Tony-rific.
I drank some beer and now I'm cured.
Oh, sweet. That's all it takes.
Yeah, Pokemon can't drink beer.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's canon.
Yeah.
Okay.
Pretty sure.
I'll probably
in the manga. Yep.
I'll accept it. You're never wrong about anything.
Oh, we're going to get into that right away.
Well, no. That's
not till. Oh, yeah, that's right. Because of the restructuring, it's not the first thing that we talk about. Huh.
No, it is.
The you being right thing.
Oh, okay. I have no idea what that is.
It's mid-episode, this episode. Okay.
Well, stay tuned for the rare occasion of George landing haphazardly on the correct answer.
And Tony admitting that George is right.
That's true.
That's the tougher.
Yeah.
That's the higher.
Without being prompted.
Yeah, it's in my notes.
But you're probably just trying to beat me to the punch so I don't rub it in like I always do.
George was right. That's what it says right there. I wrote that.
I like it. I want to get that framed. All right. Shall we?
We shall, but before we do, we should talk about our schedule adjustment that we're doing. So we've shaved enough shows off, and honestly, our Friday episode always sort of underperformed on listens. So we're cutting the Friday show and we're morphing it into this show, which needed a little bit more content. And I think the only change to the Sunday release is that the special challenge has been moved to that. So otherwise, this episode is going to be all of the anime that airs from Wednesday through Saturday. And then our Sunday episode will be everything that's Sunday through Tuesday, I guess. Yep.
All right.
So if you're online at 12 o'clock noon this Friday and you're like, where is the episode? Where is the episode? You're going to be waiting a couple of days. So.
And you clearly didn't listen to the beginning of this one.
Yeah. If you're not listening right now, if you just skip past it because you want to hear about So I'm a Spider, So What? You're gonna be disappointed on Friday, maybe.
This is true.
Or maybe this is the only show that you listen to because it's the spider show and there's no spiders on Friday.
Yeah. You don't care about any of this.
Yeah.
Well, on that note,
let's talk about Super Cub. We're on episode 7 now, it looks like.
We are, yes.
I have very, very succinct notes about this. Well, literally note, I suppose.
Just a one note.
Yep. I didn't have a whole lot to say about it, so I think you have more than I do, so I'll let you go ahead and run
sure.
with it.
Just to run through it real quick, Super Cub is a show about a girl who has a Super Cub. It's like a little moped, motorized scooter, and she's making friends along the way and bonding with, all because of her Super Cub, and she's coming out of her shell slowly. Mm-hmm. And this episode continues that. This episode I thought was weird because it's like there's this whole cultural festival going on, but our main girls, Koguma and her friend Reiko, not really interested. They just want to go eat lunch on their cubs or, go glove shopping. But there's a scene where, and this becomes all a setup for the previously unnamed third main character that you see in the intro and the ending. Yeah.
Yeah.
She's a short, sweet, kind of mild-mannered girl. I don't remember her name.
She has a name, and it is She.
Oh, She.
She.
She who must not be named.
Her last name is Eniwa, apparently, but She is what they call her, I believe.
Like S-H-I.
I. Two I's.
Oh.
She.
She.
Not she, but she.
She.
Yes.
Who must not be named.
Yes.
And it didn't come off that way as initially, but one thing that amused me, because you kind of like, as class is ending, you know, they're talking about the cultural festival, and then this girl is like asking for volunteers, and Koguma and Reiko are just like, eh, you know, we're good. Until there's like the next day or something, and they overhear a conversation of the you know, this group that's trying to organize a cultural festival. They're and I guess we should say, you know, they're doing a French themed cafe, sort of thing, or Italian.
Is it Italian? Yeah, okay. Espresso and stuff. Yeah,
that's right. But then they have some sort of issue where somebody bailed on them for transportation. They have to like go get all these supplies, a coffee machine and a bunch of random other stuff, and bring to the school from another school. And so Reiko and Koguma are like getting, you know, their class is over, and so they're getting their stuff together, and they overhear this, and they're still moseying on. They're like, all right, you know, good for you. And then one of them, you know, suggests like, oh, what about like a, you know, like a scooter or like a
motorcycle? Yeah.
Yeah. Something like that. And somebody's like, oh, no, you couldn't possibly.
You couldn't do that on a motorcycle. You crazy? An espresso machine and a bunch of like plates and saucers and cups, like fragile stuff.
Yeah.
You know.
You couldn't do it. Can't be done.
She's not wrong. I think it was she that said you can't. Oh. Or maybe it was someone else that said that you can't do it. No, it wasn't she.
Yeah, anyway, I don't remember exactly.
Whoever it was wasn't wrong in that regard that, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can't really.
Yeah, so it's pretty reasonable to doubt that, you know, that would be a viable option. But once Koguma hears this, she essentially does a hold my beer.
She gets all riled up. Yeah, and that sort of relates to the one note I have about this is that Koguma is becoming more assertive. Like, it's definitely displayed in this episode in many, many instances. Like, yeah. She's... Normally, she wouldn't have even interjected herself into this conversation at all, so...
Yeah, that's true.
That, and, like, her volunteering for it, and there's more later, too, but, yeah.
Yeah. And I agree, because I had a note about, like, she's still... Koguma is still very awkward, but she is putting herself out there more, and she's actually speaking up, you know, instead of just, you know, remaining silent and not, you know, and non-confrontational. But it's funny because she comes off as kind of a jerk. Like, she's very blunt, and I think it's a real life thing. Like, for people who are socially awkward, especially in like high school, you know, that time where it's like you don't, you know, you're already shy and you're combating that, and you don't mean to come off as harsh as you do, but it is what it is. And like, so I feel like she's like kind of just happy being able to do that and not really like aware. But the show definitely kind of played into that. But I guess that we get to that.
Even,
a little later.
I mean, even with Reiko, when this conversation is happening, she's like, "You still have that thing, right?" or something.
Yeah.
You know? And Reiko's like, "Yeah." Before she knows what Koguma's going to do, and then Koguma goes and basically volunteers them to transport the stuff that needs to be transported on their cubs, which we just said it can't be done on motorcycles. So how are they doing it?
So yeah, they have this whole plan. It's a whole like MacGyver like. Montage of them getting this contraption that goes on to one of their cubs, and then like sort of crudely just tying a rope around this cart that they find.
Yeah, the trailer thing was pretty questionable.
Yeah, I was like, okay. But the other device they have kind of like actually bolts in to the back of the cub.
And so, it was a thing that was made for, I think Reiko says it was made for people that like transport ramen, like ramen delivery drivers and stuff.
Yeah.
So that the ramen wouldn't spill. So it's like a sort of, it's a suspended box that sort of hangs off the back of the cub and has lots of, what do you call it? Suspension, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. And something that Reiko just had because she's a cub nerd.
Yes. Yeah. She is a cub enthusiast.
Otaku. Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, they assemble all that. But something that really got me, though, is like they go up to Shi. And they're kind of telling her, like, hey, we got this whole thing set up. We feel really good about it. But just in case, we also had the time to accumulate all these other items and memorabilia for you to do a completely different themed festival, American Saloon, which seemed, I took some offense to.
in case it doesn't work out or something, basically, like, we're going to go out and get all this stuff, but it might all be broken to pieces by the time we get back. You never know. So it's always good to have a backup plan, and that's sort of what they're telling her.
I guess.
And, yeah.
It just seems so, like, out of place, because I could understand having the idea, just being like, hey, like, you know, we feel confident about this, but just in case, maybe, you know, if this doesn't work out and we destroy everything, maybe you could do this. But the fact that they like gathered all this, you know, they had time. I mean, you could have already, you know, been on your way to go get the go get the stuff. And it's never, you know, in this episode anyway, is not brought up again. But I guess it was just sort of a gag, but I thought they focus on it a little too much. Like, they went to great lengths to...
Again, it was sort of Koguma being a little more assertive and stuff, because she's the one that's saying all of this to her. Like, she's like, hey, listen, little child person who doesn't know any better. This, you should have had a secondary plan for the from the get-go. The fact that we have to go and rescue you. Like, she was kind of a kind of a jerk about it.
Yes.
Again.
Yeah.
But,
yeah, very blunt and... And, not very... friendly, like, or understanding even.
Yeah, definitely seemed like she was sort of talking down to her a little bit. Although, are they all in the same class? Like, it felt like the relationship, the way that they were talking to each other, it felt like she was maybe a younger, like, Kohai of some sort, you know?
That, I wondered that too, because, I mean, she was in their classroom, but it didn't necessarily show her like during actual class time.
Yeah. So I was a little confused on that, but I think she is one of their classmates, or I'm really not sure.
Yeah. It's definitely seems like it, but she does seem, she's much smaller in stature and seems younger than they are.
Yeah.
But maybe she's just even more shy than Koguma at this point. I don't know.
Maybe. I mean, I know that they're second years or third years or something, right? I think. I don't know. I don't remember. Anyway, continue.
Yeah. I mean, just to wrap it up, they go and do it, and it's a success. And then...
And then, well, the school that they go to is the school that Koguma was doing her delivery runs for during the summer and stuff. So she kind of already knows the person there. So when they get there, she's like, just hang on, Reiko. Let me go talk to my people.
And she's still so like stern and serious, and like that teacher that she knows, she with her summer job, she's like, oh, you have your cub, like how are you gonna transport this? And like, instead of just explaining it to her, she like grabs her by the arm and like makes her walk all the way out of the school, down around the corner to where, you know, Reiko's at with the cubs. And then the teacher's like, oh, okay, I get it now. And she's like, well, like I'll go back inside and get the stuff,
I guess.
And I'm like, well, you could have saved her a trip, Koguma, like it's kind of rude. But once again, it plays into her just being
blunt,
but also awkward and not knowing how to just communicate in a, you know, clear and friendly fashion.
Yeah.
But yeah, and then after that, they kind of have, they transport the stuff back. It's all a success. They get it all set up for the cultural festival. I mean, they don't, but they hand it over. And then this new character wants to thank them. And so she brings them coffee. I'm not a coffee person. Espresso.
Some sort of, well.
Whatever
it
is.
Was it a cappuccino or an, I don't remember what it was exactly, but yeah. Mm. She brings them some sort of coffee beverage.
Yes.
Espresso-based coffee beverage.
And then, and there's something with the episode, like, it was named, like, Aqua Blue or something, and.
Oh, yeah. I remember looking at I actually paused it on the end card that said, like, the title of the episode, because I wanted to read all of the kanji and, like, because it seemed like a weird episode title. Did you figure anything out from it? Because I did, but I...
Well, I mean, I didn't really understand it, but I mean, there's a whole part where Koguma, like when she gets the mug, it's like kind of a lighter blue color. And then at the end, she goes, they finish their coffee, and so Koguma brings up the cups, you know, to return them to the festival. And then she sees she... in this different light, you know, before she thought she was just meek and, you know, and maybe Koguma was thinking like she was like better than her, like as far as the, you know, social, you know, being confident, and even though this is all very new to her, but anyway, she kind of sees her in a new light, like, you know, taking orders and, you know, taking charge and doing her thing. And then she like has a thought that like, oh, initially she reminded me of like a weaker shade of blue, but now I think there's more depth to it.
Yeah, this pale blue, I think, is what the translation says. But the Japanese was mizuiro, water-colored.
Okay.
So the color of water, which is sort of, you know, not really blue at all, you know.
Or do you think it could be like watercolors? Like
no.
No? Okay.
No, the color of water.
The color of water.
Yeah. Which is, yeah, very pale blue, like very just faintly blue, because water we normally think of as clear. And the thing that she says at the end, that Koguma's saying about this girl that I thought was pale blue, but it turns out to be, I forget what the other one is, the other color that she says, but
yeah,
sky blue.
It's like, yeah, something like that. Yeah. Yeah, sky blue or.
Yeah. Anyway, so. Yeah, I don't know what blueness has to do with it or anything, but she just thought that she was sort of bland and colorless almost, you know, that's the watercolored part of it. And then, but she turned out to be more of an azure blue or whatever. That's not what they say. But.
Yeah. And I wonder too, because when we get to Odd Taxi, which will be the next episode, but that episode brings up synesthesia.
Oh, yeah.
Which... but to tie that into this, I wonder if that's what they're going for. Like, she is kind of, I don't know, like, you know, is a bit odd and, you know, not like everyone else. So maybe she has like this sort of perception where she is seeing, you know, associating colors with personalities or something. I don't know. It was like a new thing that they introduced. So
yeah,
it seemed kind of odd.
I sort of wonder if it's a, just a sort of Japanese thing where there's this sort of shorthand for personality types that is. Maybe related to different colors. I don't know.
Yeah, that could be. Yeah, could be like an old cultural thing that we just don't know about.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we there's certainly things that we do in English, like, you know, something that's bland and boring and sort of tasteless. I guess you say, oh, it's just a vanilla whatever, right?
Yeah. So maybe
it's something like that, maybe. But I don't know for sure. I'm not aware of that that contextual usage of those words, but. But that was my assumption, was that it was maybe something like that was Japanese. Japanese people would know what it meant, but
yeah,
we didn't really get it.
but yeah, that's the episode in a nutshell.
Yeah. Okay. Hey, in a nutshell, get me out of here. all right. So let's move on to So I'm a Spider, So What? Kumo desu ka nanika, episode number 19. All right, so... Kumiko is sort of becoming annoyed with the townsfolk worshiping her. I think I sort of told you about it last time, right? She tries to, you know, tell them like, hey, I'm not a god. I don't control the weather, because they're coming to her and saying, oh, the weather's so nice today. Thank you, Kumiko, and stuff like that. And I forget what they call her. They don't call her Kumiko. But anyway. But yeah, she is like sort of trying to explain it to them, but she's a spider. So we get to see like their point of view, and she's just like shrieking and squeaking and stuff like that. They're like, oh, she's trying to tell us something, you know, like you would. Anyway, a little comic relief there at the beginning.
Nice.
So then like the next thing up is, the elf king, pays a visit to Kumiko's village. He is I call him the elf king. He's the leader of the elf clan or whatever. So he comes to the village to speak to the vampire baby's father, the vampire baby who we have seen a few times now. And their conversation is, I don't know, it seems more like he's just there to sort of check out the baby for reasons that we're not 100% sure of just yet, but might become more relevant later in the episode. Anyway, so back to Kumiko, she senses that the demon lord is approaching, like she's got that, you know, spider sense, I guess. and to her, that immediately means, well, that means that the demon lord has left mother's side, meaning mother is alone, and mother has been weakened by her, you know, psychic forces that she sent to attack mother, right? So now is a prime opportunity to get rid of mother.
Finish her off.
Yeah. So she teleports over to, you know, kill mother. I actually have it written. She yeets over to kill mother. Because yeet. It's one of these, you know, young people language things.
Oh, okay.
Yeet. Hey, everyone, get in the comments. Tell George what yeet means.
I'm old.
Anyway, so yeah, she teleports over to finish mother off. And unfortunately for her, mother was sort of expecting this and had laid webs, you know, really sticky webs all over the place. So she teleports in and basically immediately gets stuck in mother's webs.
So spiders aren't immune to other webs.
No, I mean, they can get stuck in their own webs, I guess, too. They okay. just have to know how to, you know, they know where their webs are so they can make their way around them. But anyway, okay. so she sort of gets wrapped up a little bit in Mother's web. And she gets decapitated again and becomes just a severed head yet again.
Because like Mother, poetry.
Yeah, Mother's just like, nope. Anyway, but now she's close enough to Mother that she can use the psychic connection that she had to talk to her other brains, her other minds that are currently in Mother and have been attacking Mother's soul
okay.
this whole time because she couldn't do it before because of distance things, I guess. I'm not entirely sure that they explained that. But anyway, so she's able to, you know, communicate with them. And so two of the other brains return and they're like, oh yeah, the other one, she jumped into the Demon Lord. Anyway, and all together, the three of them combined, they're able to, you know, use a bunch of magic power and kill Mother. So now Mother's dead.
Oh.
But Kumiko is just a head, a decapitated head.
Oh, still just
again.
A head.
Yeah. I think maybe she levels up and regrows a body or something. I don't remember.
So actually.
The other brains, the other
minds.
The
other brains are also just heads? Or they're like
they're just in her head. They're okay. mental projection sort of things. They're different parts of her brain that sort of control different things. Like there's her as the main one. And then when she, at some point she got the ability to have multiple minds, multiple brains, multiple consciousnesses or something like that.
Okay.
And she gets one that sort of handles the magic stuff. So she's like doing the physical stuff. And then she's got this other brain that does the magic stuff so that she can do two things at once. It's sort of a multitasking thing.
Huh.
She levels up that ability again, and she gets a third one that sort of controls her physical body, and the other one controls the magic, so she's basically just doing the strategy stuff, I guess. And then she levels up again and gets another one that does some other magic stuff or something. So she's got, you know, like four brains. There's Kumiko, wow. and then there's the other three brains.
It's not fair. I want to outsource my duties.
Duties. Anyway, yeah, so she regains two of the external brains that she had sent through the psychic connection to Mother to attack Mother. But one of them, when the Demon Lord had made a psychic connection with Mother, traveled through and is now attacking the Demon Lord's soul, is how they refer to it. So
okay.
attacking her life points directly.
The Demon Lord
that
is?
That was a Yu-Gi-Oh! Reference.
Oh.
It doesn't matter.
I never really watched it.
I attack your life points directly! You know, after you've... Never mind. I was just going to explain how the card game works, and I realize it's really not that important to this spider episode. Anyway, yes. One of her... It's actually her body brain, as she calls it, the physical one, that traveled through and is now basically residing in the Demon Lord's brain and attacking the Demon Lord.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, so Kumiko, you know, gains the two back, and then they attack and they kill Mother, and Mother's dead. And then, it's Shun time.
Okay,
so we're
back to the
it.
Future.
Yep, back to the future. We're back to Shun, and it's time for our 15-year high school reunion.
Oh boy!
Because they've finally arrived at the elf village that Sensei has been taking them to, because their teacher was born as an elf in this new world. And it turns out like her father, I think we already knew this, her father is the elf king who we had seen in the previous episode as well. Right. Anyway, and, we find out that, their teacher Sensei has, I forget her actual name. It's actually,
bum.
It doesn't actually matter. I'm not going to look it up. I'm just going to call her Sensei because that's what they call her mostly.
There you go.
You know what bothers me? That I've been reading the light novel a lot lately, and I know they say it a lot in the light novel, and they call her something shorter than her real name.
Shorty.
No, I mean, it's a shortened form of her real name, and she gets annoyed by them, that they're like, she says, oh, you shouldn't make up nicknames for your teacher or something like that. I don't know. It's like Yuki Nara Sensei or something like that, and they call her Yuki or something. I don't think that's it, but it's something like that. Doesn't okay. matter. Sensei, we'll call her. She probably cut all of that out. I got really sidetracked there for a second for no reason. Anyway, so they finally reached the elf village and they're reunited with all of the other students that Sensei has gathered over the years. So Sensei has been like, we knew that she knew where all the other students were, but we didn't necessarily know that she had actually gathered them all, but Yeah, she's basically gathered all of the other students from the class, and they're living in this house outside the Elf Village.
This is from the class in the future.
No,
Oh.
from the class in the other world before they
Oh,
died
I
and
see.
were
So
reincarnated.
everyone except Kumiko.
Yeah, she hasn't gathered everyone because there's some that she has said are dead
Oh,
and
okay.
some that she couldn't reach,
Okay. There's some
Kumiko being one of
exceptions.
them. Yeah, there's a few exceptions to it. I think she's gathered like 13 of them or something.
Okay.
Anyway, so yeah, so they have like a little reunion where they're all like, "Oh, hey, I'm Shun, and this is the girl who used to be a boy in the old world, but now she's a girl." Oh, and this dragon here, this is another of our classmates. Weird, right?
Totally.
Stuff like that. So, anyway, so yeah, they all get together, and some of them are kind of talking trash about Sensei. Not all of them are happy to have been brought there, and it's not immediately apparent what why, but it turns out that Sensei and her father in this world, the Elf King, had basically just gone around, and her father's like high enough level magic user, he could sort of appraise, and he could see that little thing that says that they're a reincarnation. And somehow, even though she was a baby, she was able to communicate with him and tell him about the reincarnations because he basically goes around and just kidnaps all of these kids. So,
Oh, wow.
he was the one that was sort of behind the attacks on Sophia's carriage, the vampire baby.
Yeah.
Remember this?
Yeah.
So those people that were attacking that were attacking on his behalf, like he was in charge of it.
Okay. Not to hurt her, but just to kidnap.
Apparently now, yes, we didn't
Okay.
know that at the time, but now we know that that is what they were probably trying to do, was they were trying to kidnap baby Sophie or Sophia. Is it Sophie or Sophia? One of those. They were trying to kidnap the vampire baby because she was a reincarnation. So, yeah. And yeah, then we go back and we see Kumiko again, and she senses once again that the Demon Lord is now heading her way because I guess the Demon Lord sensed that Mother was now dead. She lost that connection and sort of immediately figured out, well, Kumiko must be there, so I'm gonna head back that way.
Okay.
I don't know why Kumiko can teleport and the Demon King can't, or the Demon Lord can't, but apparently that's the case. Anyway, so yeah.
So.
Kumiko senses it, and then the episode just sort of ends. Like, so we might get the Demon Lord Kumiko showdown coming up
Sounds like a
soon.
cliffhanger.
Yeah, sort of. Yeah.
Okay. Seems like a
Anyway,
jam-packed episode.
there was quite a bit in it because, like, the human stuff wasn't super boring or anything, so it was worth mentioning, I guess. But yeah, I mean, I've got a fair amount, half a page, I guess, of notes on it. So yeah.
Nice.
Pretty good. As I said, I have been reading the light novel. I am not actually even caught up to this point. I'm probably about halfway through volume two. I forget how many chapters. Chapters are weird in this, like the numbering of it. Because I think there's technically like 16 chapters in the first volume, but there's so many of these like Shun chapters that are sort of thrown in, and then mini chapters and stuff like that. I think the actual count was 24. 24 chapters in the first volume, and then I don't know exactly where I am in the second volume. I don't even remember, but
Okay.
I mean, Kumiko is still in the cave, or in the Elro Labyrinth. She's working her way through the middle stratum of the Elro Labyrinth. For those that have watched it and remember that, you'll know where I am. Yeah, I'm gonna keep reading it. I'm gonna just I don't know what volume this current timeline that we're watching is even in. So I'm just going to keep reading until I catch up, and then I'll see if I can apply the brakes.
Yeah, probably not, but
Probably not.
it's my
But
from my past experience with such things.
I don't know. I mean, I might not even catch up before the end of this season,
That's true.
honestly. So I mean, we're already at wait, what are we at? This is episode 19, and there's 24 total, so there's only five more. So
Yeah,
I don't know.
maybe not.
Depending on how fast I read, I guess. But yeah, that is So I'm a Spider, So What? And yeah, I'm still enjoying it quite a lot, as you can probably guess by the fact that I've gone and started reading the light novels.
Yeah.
But then the next up, we have the other Friday show that we watch, those Snow White Notes.
That's right. the shamisen show, the shamisen players, and we're both watching, I think, still. This one, so I mean, they're at this competition to do this, to do their group performance.
And tournament arc.
They are continues. Scheduled last, very conveniently. So last, not this episode, but the week before, they had arrived there. And so, you know, kind of, it's like, okay, here we go. And then this one, they're still waiting. But I like this episode. I didn't love it, but for anyone that's been following along, I'm rooting for this show. I really want it to succeed. And it's keeping me going without, you know, really blowing me away. But
I feel like it's this episode particularly is really trying to get the feels, right?
Yes.
Like it's sort of poking at him, and it nearly got me a couple times. Not like super strong, but it, you know, a little bit.
I agree. Yeah, it was like starting to finally, like, you know, at least try to blossom with that aspect.
Yeah.
And so we learned more about Yui, who is, I wrote down her name. That's how much we learned. But she's the one with the glasses that is sort of a secondary character. And she only joined the, shamisen club to support her friend, who is Shuri. Mm. And so that was kind of the crux of this episode, where Shuri was like in her head about the performance, and then she realized that she had not considered Yui's feelings, and she noticed that Yui was like probably holding, you know, her emotions in. And then there's a part where Yui was like, well, after this I'm done, I'm quitting the shamisen club.
Yeah, I just did it so we could get into the competition, is what she says, right?
And I mean, which I think was good for the drama, melodrama really, because it sort of sparked in Shuri's mind, like, you know, like, oh, you know. First of all, I thought it was kind of messed up for her to, I mean, it's good story-wise, but, like, messed up for her to tell that to her, you know, tell that to Shuri, like, right before they're about to perform.
Yeah.
It's like, well, that's not helping anything.
Yeah.
But then a little later on, Shuri's kind of thought about it, and she kind of blows up on
Yui
for, like, not for holding her emotions in. And then so she kind of like pushes her to explode with, you know, everything that's on her mind. And and I forget specifically, like, she was angry at herself for I don't know, for not taking it seriously enough, or for not, I don't know, I can't remember exactly how what she expressed during that, but we learned a bit more about her. And it cut back to like her childhood and stuff, and how the two of them met. They were real little, like on the playground, and Shuri was like a new, you know, a new classmate and didn't have any friends. And she kind of reached out to her, even though
she was getting picked on a little bit too.
Yeah. Getting teased. Yeah. And she kind of, I mean, not like, she just kind of like, you know, threw her a bone essentially. And, but wasn't necessarily like, oh, I'm your savior, or, you know, I'm going to, you know, go above and beyond. She was just like, hey, like, want to eat lunch or whatever she said.
Yeah.
So that was the most of the episode. I still like the performances.
The performances was kind of the rest of the episode. Yeah.
Yeah. And they kind of built up. We got to see, Mai Mai, who is Setsu's pseudo, or self-imposed rather, rival.
Yeah. She's not Setsu's rival, but Setsu is her rival.
Yes, that's true. That's true.
However that works. Yeah.
I mean, either way, she's pulling. And what's kind of funny too, because they've done this whole gag, which I like, of her like, of Mai Mai like trying to make a stand against Setsu, like alert him to her presence, and like, you know, call him out, be like, this, you know, this is on, this is a competition, you know, this is personal. But she keeps getting thwarted in that, like, she turns to go talk to him and he's gone, or she walks in the room and they're all like striking poses and she's like awkward. But yeah, she's kind of growing on me. I the more I learn about her, I like her. Like, she's
annoying but still likable.
Yeah,
which is a tough combo to pull off. I think
so too.
Yeah,
like, you can tell how earnest she is, but she's just so like maybe immature, or just so energetic about, you know, how she feels that she, is kind of annoying, like you said, but it's endearing. I can get with it. And I said last week, cause I was looking it up, but there, you know, it was like 27 volumes of this manga that it's based on. So I'm like, all right, like I'm settling in. I'm hoping that there's more seasons to come. And I'm hoping it continues to, maybe it's just a slow burn, starts kind of, you know,
it seems like, yeah, it's starting to a little bit. Yeah. Sort of, it's built up everything and now it's ready to start sort of releasing some of the built up, tension that it has.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cause they spent so much time investing in Setsu and what was going on with him.
I mean, there was a decent amount of development on the other characters as well, or a moderate amount. I don't know that it was decent. It was probably a little below what I would have liked, but you know, they invested enough in those characters that we at least care a little bit. Yeah. And then as they're starting to sort of release this, this drama feels stuff that they got going on, we care just enough that when that happens, we care more, right?
So yeah.
They're building up on the base that they've set. The base was pretty unstable, I think, overall. But they seem to be building
thin. Like,
yeah,
it wasn't a lot to go off of.
Yeah, but they seem to be building upon it well, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. I agree. And it's definitely a slow burn, but I'm enjoying it. Seems like you weren't too sour on this one.
Yeah, I mean the most of it prior to the performance section. The actual drama, actual story stuff. I enjoyed more than I think any other episode so far of this show.
Oh, nice.
So, I'm enjoying it as well. On the performance part of it, I think because there was a pretty large segment of this that was just performances of the different groups and stuff.
Yeah.
And I think I've nailed down exactly what it is about that I don't like.
Hmm.
I have to sort of compare it to like a food or cooking anime, which we have sort of done in the past where, you know, their reaction to the thing is interesting. And the difference here, I think, is that in those cooking animes, like I think of Yakitate, which is one that I watched a long time ago. Most people are going to think of
Food Wars.
Mm-hmm. Sorry. All I remember is Soma, that's his name, but I can't think of even the Japanese title. Anyway, so in those, we have these people that are reacting to this food that we can't taste. Mm. And so their reactions are sort of us being able to sort of taste the food. What's the word for that? Through someone else.
Yeah, vicariously.
Vicariously, like, that's the word I was trying to think of. Yeah, so we're sort of tasting that food vicariously through their description of the effect that it has on them. Mm. But we can't taste the food ourselves.
Yes.
Whereas with this, we can hear the music.
Yeah, yeah.
And so if we don't have the same reaction to hearing the music that they have...
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't that just indicate that there's something wrong with us, that we're not listening to the music right? And so... why would I want to watch a show that's basically telling me that my ears are broken every week, right? Like it feels wrong. It's like, oh, this is like, we're flying through the air and then we dive down into lotus petals and, you know, like,
yeah.
But I can hear the music. So I have my own reaction to it.
That's true.
And them describing it doesn't draw me into that reaction. Whereas with the food thing, I can't taste the food. So them describing how the food makes them feel.
Mm.
Is believable. I can buy into that.
And you kind of need it to you know, get invested in,
what's
happening.
And so I think that's the difference. That's the disconnect. That's the problem I have with this whole reaction to the music thing, is that I don't feel that way when I hear that music. Like I like it. I actually enjoyed the performances listening to them, but all of the reaction stuff that they have, and how it makes them feel. I mean, maybe I guess I'm supposed to be invested enough that I care about how they feel about the music, but I don't. So failure on the show's part to make me invested enough in it to care about that, or just a poor concept in the first place. Now, the difference is, this is from a manga, though, right?
Yeah, I was going to say that.
All right, yeah. So in the manga, totally makes sense, because I can't hear the music, and them describing it, I could probably get on board with that, but it just doesn't work in the anime.
I totally hear you. I'm sort of mixed on the reactions. Like some of them I can accept and like, okay, I get that. And then others I'm like, I don't, and I'm no shamisen expert, and so it's like, but I feel like in general, especially when these performances, you're seeing the audience and are cutting to different characters, some who are new and some that we already know, like their teacher and you know, kind of
and they're
mentor
all
and
like completely inspired and taken aback by the sounds that they hear.
That's true, but it reminds me. But they all don't. They all seem to have like a slightly different take on it too. I mean, some of them are in line with each other, but I appreciate that where it's not like, you know, because when you were describing it, I thought you were getting, before you brought up food shows, I thought you were going to bring up like the shonen battle trope of like there'll be this epic battle going on, which we can all see. We can see what's happening. You see the moves they're making, but then you'll have people on the sideline being like, "Oh my god, they just did a." You know, whatever, I don't, you know, triple flip with a backhand or I don't know. And, you know, you get all those reactions of like, and so that can, not in every shonen, of course, but there's certain ones and certain battles that are just kind of annoying because they just layer that on so
yeah,
much.
Yeah, we're talking
like,
about My Hero later. And there's, you know,
yeah, my Am I Hero,
pretty
yeah.
sure like this, everything, we can get to it then, I guess.
Yeah. So I feel like, I totally get what you're saying. Like, it's like you can hear the music. And I guess that's for me what I like the most and I focus on, because I think when people are actually playing and the songs that, you know, the actual music we're hearing, I just like, I don't know.
Oh, I enjoy that too. I enjoy actually hearing the music. But again, the reactions, the part where we go into like the mental state of the characters listening to the music, it doesn't work in this medium. Like, it probably works very well in the manga.
Yeah, because you can't. Yeah,
because you can't
hear
it, right? But now I can hear it, and it breaks it. It breaks that whole concept. You just you can't do it. You have to adapt it differently or something. Like, it's just they're doing it wrong. That's all I'm saying. But it's not all about the music. There's like the drama, the character drama, and stuff, and that's good.
Yeah.
So it doesn't bother me that much. It's just I've been saying for weeks now how it annoys me every time they do that. And I hadn't really been able to put it into words why.
Yeah, and articulate it.
And this is why I thought about it more. And
it's a solid argument. I cannot disagree with it. I guess I'm just not as bothered by it because I guess I just focus more on the music. But there are times when, like, yeah, someone has some reaction.
I mean,
it's
worse when, like, their reactions are interrupting the music. I'd rather listen to the damn music, to be honest with you.
No, I agree. Or at least wait till after and you can have all your thoughts on it.
Yeah.
And maybe, I mean, certainly this part of the season we're in, it's a competition, a little arc or whatever. So we're getting a lot of performances and therefore getting a lot of reactions to those performances. So it's kind of really, it's the thickest it's ever been so far.
Which I think is why I was able to sort of figure it out in like the latter half of this episode, which is almost all performance. So
yeah, that's true.
I just, while listening to the music, I was thinking about it and being like, oh, you know what? That's why I figured it out. Anyway, that's probably enough about this show. I have a half of page just talking about that subject that I just breached. So let's move on to something much shorter. Gloomy, the Naughty Grizzly. Don't run from bears. Reprise.
Yeah. Yep. It's like, didn't you already learn your lesson?
Literally the first episode was the same title. This is like second chapter of that same title, whatever. I don't remember what the title of the episode was, but they share the same title.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah. So boy has to pee. Gloomy's laying on him. So he sort of pushes Gloomy off and then goes running to the bathroom so he doesn't pee his pants. Don't run from bears. He gets attacked.
Some very important life lessons.
Bum, 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 bum.
Don't have a bear as a pet, and then if you do, don't run from it.
Yep. All right, let's move on then to, there's something else in the shorts and O&A block this week, George.
My God.
That I didn't even tell you about. So I saw this online that there was this animated O&A thing that was going to be on YouTube on, I forget what the YouTube channel was, but the Japanese title is Oihana Mitsuketa, or I Found a Blue Feather would be my sort of translation of the title, which I think is fairly accurate, even though I'm not an expert in Japanese. Anyway,
so get in the comments.
This is the first episode of this show, and the plot goes something like this. A boy finds a blue feather. The boy wonders, what sort of bird has a blue feather like this? He goes and he shows it to his sister, and he says, hey, sister, Do you know what sort of bird this feather is from? She says, no, I don't know. And then a crow shows up and starts talking to them and says, well, you're never going to find what bird that blue feather came from if you're on the ground. You have to take to the skies. And then the crow grows incredibly large and says, get on my back and we'll go searching for this blue feathered bird. And so they climb onto his back and they fly into the sky. And yeah, that's the episode.
Oh, cliffhanger.
And then the during the end credits, they show a bird and they play its actual call, the bird call. Mm. And then they have a bunch of information about the bird and stuff.
Nice.
It is the reason I didn't even tell you about it is it's difficult to watch. It's not properly subtitled in English. Mm. It's not even properly subtitled in Japanese. So it's just using the auto detect Japanese feature on YouTube. And then I translate that to English and I'm able to piece together enough between the Japanese and the parts of the English subtitles that are correct. To sort of get the gist of the story, especially with something this short. It's, I don't know, 3-4 minutes, I think.
Oh, okay.
Pretty short. It was cute. It felt a little kidsy, you know?
Yeah. Almost seems like a fairy tale, not the show, but like a fairy tale-esque setup.
Very T-A-L-E, not T-A-I-L, right?
Well, I mean like an actual fairy tale, not the show.
Yeah, that's why I said T-A-L-E, because the show is
T-A-I-L. Oh, yeah, T-I-L. Yes, you're right. T-A-L-E. Sorry, you confused me.
Spelling, numbers, magnets, how they work.
You were drawing in the air and I was entranced.
Oh.
But that does sound cute. I'm into birds.
Yeah,
but
it was cute and it was, again, kidsy because this crow shows up and just starts talking and then it suddenly grows giant for no, like, unexplained, you know, just completely unexplained reason.
Yeah.
And then, like, sure, Mr. Crow, we'll climb onto your back and fly off into oblivion with you, I guess. It seems kind of creepy, like this crow or raven or whatever. I mean, it's some sort of what's that group of birds called? That type of bird group that crows and ravens and there's a new Pokemon.
Magpie.
No. The new Pokemon that's like a raven type thing. Do you remember its name? Because I know you've played that game.
Oh, yeah. I know what you're referring to.
Core something.
Yeah, I got nothing. But I get what you mean.
Corviknight.
Oh, Corviknight. Yep.
And the, I don't know, probably don't need to focus on that much, but Corvus or something along those lines is the name of the group that crows and ravens and a couple of the birds belong to, those blackbird type things. Anyway, whatever. It just seems like a child abductor. That's all I'm saying. Talked way too long about it because this is the O&A's and shorts block, and it is a short O&A. We should probably move on to Saturday episodes, which are now included in this episode of the show.
Bonus.
Because there won't be an episode coming out on Friday. We're covering it right now. Get on board. Get in the choppa.
Giddy up. So that brings us to My Hero Academia.
Yeah.
Popular show.
And, oh, yeah. I had a thing I needed to say. George was right.
Oh, snap. Oh, yes, yes.
Yes.
My prediction was correct.
Your prediction was correct.
Yes.
That it would be really funny if the next battle just took like 5 minutes. And it wasn't 5 minutes. It was half the episode.
Yeah.
But I still got to give you credit. That was a good call.
Thank you.
I was really happy when it came true.
Oh,
me too. I was expecting this one because Baka goes in and I was expecting them to draw it out and make it more, you know.
Even halfway through the fight, I was like, because I was like, maybe? And then things started to go awry for them and I was like, oh, God.
Yeah.
Here we go. Well, but yeah, they did
some,
it.
They got to have some tension in there, so.
That's true.
But yeah, basically half the episode was the Bakugo group's fight against the Class B group.
It was Bakugo with his team, but Jiro is part of that team, and I just wanted to give her a shout out. She's the headphone jack girl.
Oh yeah, ears girl.
Yeah, and
don't call me ears. She kept saying.
Yeah,
as I recall. And
I like. And she's probably one of my favorites of Class A. So
grape juice too, right?
Was he in this one?
Wasn't he in this one?
No, he's with. I think he's in the last one with Uraraka and Deku. Yeah.
Okay. I just remember he was sort of featured in this episode. I couldn't remember if it was in the first half or the second half, I guess.
Yeah.
But yeah. Wait, who else is in the group? Oh, there's that one guy.
The guy that shoots glue or something? Or I don't know what he shoots.
Well, the glue guy, that was a Class B guy, right? Glue guy?
Oh, was it?
Yeah, glue guy's a Class B guy.
Oh, okay. Okay, so it's the guy that shoots the ribbons or the...
Oh, yeah, tape.
Tape arm guy. Yeah,
tape arm guy.
So tape
That's
arm
right.
guy.
Wow, it's almost like we didn't watch this episode. I can't even remember. Well, I mean, not that any of them were that important, because
yeah.
it was all really Bakugo-centric,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
They were just very supporting.
Of course, I like Jiro, and she got, you know, she had a bit of, you know, interplay
yeah.
with that. But yeah. but yeah, it was definitely a Bakugo.
Tape Arms did too.
Yeah.
And I don't remember at all who the last one was.
Oh, whatever. Get in the comments.
I could look through this list of every character that is in My Hero Academia and eventually find it.
We don't have time for that.
I'm not going to do that.
So I was, my prediction was right in general, but I was wrong because I thought it'd be funny if, I mean, obviously, but I thought it'd be great if the match was over very quickly and they played it for laughs. But they didn't do that. The match was over quickly, and they gave like a satisfying payoff for Bakugo, I thought, which was just really him just working with his teammates and like
for once
not being a complete dick. Yeah, so it was like
not being a complete dick.
A complete dick. Yeah, yes.
He was still a dick.
Yeah, he still had to like have his one-liners and you know scoff and
do all and that, I mean he essentially dictated the whole thing that was going on, but he. Rather than just doing everything himself, he at least told them what to do to help him achieve victory, I guess.
Yeah. You know? And they slowly revealed his plan as the match was going on, which I thought was done well. Like, all in all, he told them essentially, like, you know, if you guys are, you know, in danger, I'll protect you. Mm. And vice versa. Like, I'm gonna try to just end this. And with your guys' support, but if things go awry, like let's just help each other out, which is very nice. It was heartfelt. I literally brought
it. It sounds very nice and heartfelt until you consider how he says it. Oh, kick your ass. Anyway,
but they're all used to that.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
As are we.
If he's your friend, you're gonna get used to it, I guess.
Yeah. Definitely the loudest Class A member. So
yeah.
So yeah, I enjoyed that, and
yeah. The only note I have on the fight is Bakugo is gonna Bakugo.
Yeah,
you know,
pretty much.
That's what he does.
Yeah, he just basically like, and he definitely shows that like he has better stamina than he had in. I don't remember the last fight we saw.
Yeah, well,
in,
even but... like his arm things get destroyed, and he's. I mean, I guess those were to help him like shoot bombs or whatever, but he's still able to sort of shoot the fire to fly thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting. He was able to give them all bombs in the beginning, which is a good,
right.
clever move.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it was literally wrapped up by the midway point.
the mid break where there would have been a commercial if we were watching it on TV. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
So it was nice. And then the second half, which was great too. I literally wrote bonus points. They reflect on the fight. Oh, I'm sorry. He had something.
I was going to just say that instead of actually getting into the next battle, since they've, you know, so succinctly wrapped up this battle in half an episode, they could have just, you know, gotten into the next battle, but no, they spend this whole second half of the episode, you know, reflecting and then talking about the next battle and strategizing and stuff like that. So I was just sort of hoping that we'd get like a half an episode into the next battle, which is no doubt going to last like five episodes. So
yeah, but this is it. This is the one we've been waiting for. So
yeah, I don't know if your other prediction about this fight getting interrupted is going to happen or not, though.
Oh, maybe not. But it's like, I don't know. The show early on, the show was so good about having these sort of left turns, you know, like unexpectedly. Yeah. So maybe they won't do that, but clearly. Something is going to happen between Shinso and
they've definitely set it up that way. Yes.
Yeah, and it's going to hopefully continue this whole vestige thing that's been set up. And
yes, so, which would be nice to get back into, I guess.
Yeah, yeah, that was they reintroduced that in the first real episode of the season. So it's like
I guess. They do talk about when they're sort of recapping and rehashing stuff. They do talk about the score, Class A versus Class B, because there was a tie. And prior to that, each class had won. And so now Class A has won another one.
And there was a draw.
Yeah, that's what I said. Yeah, the tie.
Okay. Oh, yes.
So this fifth battle, if Class A wins, whatever, they were winning anyway, doesn't matter. If Class B wins, they can tie it up.
Yeah.
So
they can no longer win.
That's probably the more interesting route to take as far as story goes, is for them to, for Class B to win, which probably means, yeah, something pretty serious is going to happen with Deku versus Shinso. So,
yeah.
And I'm just hoping it doesn't take five episodes, four episodes, three episodes, two episodes.
It can take however long it wants, as long as it's,
it can't.
But as long as it's doing something interesting with it and furthering the plot, like that's what I feel like.
I guess that's true. If there was some break in the action where we're sort of like inside Deku's mind with the vestiges or something like that.
Yeah.
I could see that extending it. But I mean, actual fighting, if it's really just people punching each other for five episodes, I'm on the verge of dropping this show, honestly.
Oh, wow.
I really am. I'm really sick of this season. And I wasn't really into the latter part of last season either. So I don't know. Like, I still enjoy it somewhat, but it's so little. It's like a little, like, sliver of what I care about in an episode, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway, all right. You just continue with your praise of the second half of the episode if you want.
Not that it was, you know, fantastic or anything. I enjoyed it because, like we said, they reflect on the battle that just happened, which has been the case up until now. They reflect on the battle, and then, you know, they get ready for the next one. But I just appreciated that, you know, they got all that. They were able to end this battle, the fourth match, and set up the fifth one. So it's like, you know, the next episode, we're right into it. There's no lollygagging or setup or anything. So
one can hope.
Yeah, one can hope. But I'm with you. I mean, I'm not on the verge of dropping it. I feel like at this point, I'm just invested, and it's so popular that I got to see where it goes. So it would really have to. I mean, if anything, I would start reading the manga, and I've thought about that before. So if you dropped it, that's probably what I would do, because then...
I mean, I might start reading the manga, and I'll just skip all the crap that I don't care about until I get to the interesting part. So, you know, skip the next 13 chapters probably, and I don't know.
Well, I feel confident that this... I mean, we talked about this before, but that this show is suffering from what a lot of shonen... manga adaptations do, where it's like they're starting to catch up, and you can just feel it. Like, if you watch the first two seasons of My Hero, like, the pacing is really nice. Like, things move along at a very satisfying speed. But now it's like things, and I had this issue with One Piece, although it didn't start affecting me until like episode 500 and something. So pretty early on with, like, you know, getting up to 100 episodes with My Hero. But I just feel it. Like, they're just stretching it out because it's popular, and they don't want to catch up and have like an Attack on Titan situation where they have to wait like 2 years or whatever to,
I mean, I have less faith than you do in that. I feel like the manga probably at this part is probably stretched too. Like, they're just filling it. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. I haven't read the manga. That would be an interesting thing to do, like, as a project, is pages per episode, right?
Yeah.
So how many pages was this episode?
Like, can, like, graph it along, you know, for each
four. This was four pages in this episode, maybe. Whereas if you go back to like the first season, that first episode of the first season, probably 10 to 20 pages, honestly.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I think so.
So yeah, it would be interesting to look at that graph and just see how terrible this show has become in actuality, in a very non-subjective way, very objective way of saying how bad this show
just
is.
Look
now.
At the numbers. Well, fair enough. Well, I would actually really like to read
the manga. I'll get to work on that. I'll work up a spreadsheet. I'll have it printed out next week, probably.
Excellent. Well, while we wait for that, why don't we talk about the next show?
I've been killing slimes for 300 years, and I maxed out my level.
You must be tired. That's a lot of slimes.
Accidentally, in parentheses, because that's in the Japanese title, but it's not in the English title.
I see.
Yeah.
It's not as snappy.
Yeah, she accidentally maxed out her level. She wasn't doing it on purpose. She just, you know, was killing slimes, you know, and they're slimes, whatever. Anyway, okay, I've been killing slimes for 300 years, yada, 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 yada. Last time we left off, it was sort of a cliffhanger. Harkera had accidentally knocked out the demon king, the lowly demon king, if you recall this.
Yes, I do remember the
so
cute
fan service elf knocked out the lolly demon.
Okay,
right?
And they didn't realize at first that it was that,
right.
That
they didn't know that she was the demon king or anything. Okay. Right, but yeah, Halkara just being sort of clumsy and stuff, accidentally knocks her out, and then all the demons like take her and put her in jail and say that they're going to execute her and stuff like that. And so now Azusa has to basically come up with a plan. And so she concocts this potion that's essentially something really sour tasting that she thinks if she, so the Demon King is still unconscious, she thinks anyway, turns out not, but anyway. So she concocts this potion that she's going to sort of pour in the Demon King's mouth that's really sour and should cause the Demon King to wake up, right? That's her plan. So she sneaks in there and she's about to pour it in there, and then the Demon King is awake because she wasn't still knocked out anymore, I guess. And and basically the Demon King says, oh, well, if you want to save your friend, you have to beat me in a duel. Because, you know, Demon King's going to... Demon King, I guess? Anyway. and they do call this Loli the Demon King, by the way, which a king is generally a title for males, but she is not. She's just she's a Loli. She's the ruler of the demons, I guess, might be a better term.
We're gender fluid in Slimeland, okay?
Yeah. I mean, all of the characters are female, basically. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. So kings, lords, whatever, they're all females. Mm. Anyway, so yeah, so Azusa says, all right, I guess. And then she beats her in the duel because Azusa is so super OP.
She's maxed out, right?
Yeah, she is max level. And then the Demon King says, aha, I tricked you. This whole thing was just a ruse to get you to beat me so that I could have someone, to sort of be a supplicant to, I guess. I don't know if that's the right word or not, but like someone who's better than me, because I spend all of my days with all of these people sort of, you know, worshiping me and sucking up to me. And I wanted someone to, to look up to myself.
I see. Senpai.
That was, yeah, basically that was her whole, she actually calls her One-chan, I think.
Okay.
But, yeah, that was the Demon King's whole thing. She just wanted someone to, or sorry, she calls her One-sama, but same thing basically, right?
Well, Sama, so.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, much more respectful for sure. So then after that, it's time for the award that Azusa was promised, for helping reunite the, for patching the bad blood between the Red Dragon and Blue Dragon clans. She's getting a peace award.
Okay.
And the Demon King decides, you know, our Red Dragon girl, whose name I probably wrote down. I hope I did. Laika. Yeah. Laika, the Red Dragon girl. She decides Laika is also going to get an award for, you know, helping to establish this peace, this reconciliation between the tribes. And then she also decides that the Blue Dragon girl, whose name I did not write down, is going to get an award too. So they all get their awards. And then the Demon King's like, oh yeah, there's one more thing. Blue Dragon girl, you have to let Azusa rub your horns, which is apparently a very, it's not sexual. I know what you're thinking. It wasn't.
Well, I mean, come on. Rub a horn? I mean.
But it is very much a thing where, like, you're sort of lowering yourself below that person, I guess. And apparently in the Blue Dragon culture, having someone rub your horns means that you're basically their servant for life or whatever.
I see.
The Demon King knows this. Azusa doesn't. Azusa's like, okay, I'll rub your horns. She does. And so now the Blue Dragon girl... is part of the family, I guess, you know, because she's going to just follow Azusa everywhere she goes, because Azusa is now her master, basically. Anyway, yeah. So
sounds
one
like
more...
they need to take their dragon and go house hunting.
No, that would be really boring.
But they do need a bigger house per my account.
Yeah, no, I think you're right, actually. I think they are probably maxed out on occupancy, but I was paying more attention during the opening credits, and there's probably at least three more that we haven't seen yet.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, actually, I even have it in my notes. I think there's two or three more that I've seen in the openings that we haven't seen yet. And we've got, what, five episodes left of this? So, yeah. they're probably going to have to expand the house or something. Well, I mean, Ghost Girl doesn't actually take up any space, but you know, that's true. Whatever.
But hey, even she needs to, you know, have her privacy.
So we've got Azusa, the Witch of the Highlands, right? Mm-hmm. She's like the main one. And then we've got the two slime daughters.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And we've got Laika, Red Dragon Girl.
Okay.
Who is sort of following Azusa. And we added Ghost Girl. Oh, and we've got Halkara, the fan service elf.
Okay, yep.
The demon lord, Beelzebub, she doesn't actually live at the house or anything.
She just visits
a lot, right. And we got Ghost Girl, right? I didn't say Ghost Girl yet. And now we've got Blue Dragon Girl. There's like eight in the house now. Yeah, they're probably at capacity. Well, damn. I mean, we're not counting Ghost Girl, so seven. Because Ghost Girl doesn't take up any space, like I said.
She still needs her own room, you know, have her privacy. And
I mean, she can literally go any. I don't think she needs to sleep or anything.
No.
And she's now free to basically go anywhere. So she can just sort of hang out outside and I don't know. Whatever.
You're a very rude host.
I don't know that she needs her own room, and I don't know that any of them, except maybe Azusa, have their own room.
Not really.
The two slime girls probably share a room, and I'm assuming Halkara and Rosalie, the ghost girl, probably share a room, which means, Laika and Blue Dragon Girl are going to have to share a room. Wow.
But they were got a peace prize.
That's true, but there's still some tension between them, I guess. Mm. You know, as leaders
for
of the clan,
comedic effect at this point. I imagine.
Yeah. Cool. Anyway, it's cute. It's funny. It's enjoyable, and
nice.
I like it.
Yeah, sounds like just fun, funny show.
Yeah, it's pretty good. So I guess then we should talk about Shadow's House episode 7.
Woo-hoo.
Is the last thing we have to talk about this episode.
That's right.
This is the end of the episode.
We're nearing it.
Holy cow. All right. Exciting.
Very.
So what do you got to say? You got anything?
Yeah. This is episode 7. We're continuing with the Garden Labyrinth as part of the debut, which is more of a
test.
Of skill and wit and strength, I suppose. And just, you know, I don't know. So we got to see a little bit more of the masters, which are the adult shadows, family members, and they're in this room.
I have them as the elder shadows, but that's my own name for them, so maybe
nice.
Not accurate.
I like that. The elder shadows, they were teased at the end of last week's episode, and it was like, okay, because it was, you know, first time we're seeing any adults. And it still seems this way, but you know, when they were first introduced, it seemed like, you know, they're getting some sort of sick pleasure out of, you know, watching, you know, all these Shadows members and their dolls kind of, you know, fail or suffer.
Stumbling and fumbling and yeah.
Yeah. But in this one, we get a little bit more, like they're very, like per my account, they're very invested in this. There's people they seem to be rooting for, people they're, you know, specifically hoping they fail.
Yeah, I mean, it's like the Super Bowl, man. They're watching the Super Bowl. They probably have a pool going on.
But I was impressed by the notion that they knew all the dolls' names and they knew.
That's true.
Of course, they know the Shadows members. That makes sense to me. But I thought it was interesting that they showed enough care and interest to, you know, to know their names and, like, you know, be following all of them and not just like focusing on one or the other. And I'm sure it's for the audience to a certain extent, but it's interesting to see them a little more.
But there's only like five shadows and five dolls, right?
Not too many.
Like 10, not a ton to remember, but yeah, sure.
Yeah, it was like, because I kind of thought, you know, they're sort of elite, and maybe, you know, they didn't care that much, that they were just like, getting pleasure out of just watching them being tormented, you know, instead of being like, I know who these people are and I've been following them, and they seem to have like reports on each one of them. And
yeah, that's true.
And knew more than I thought they would have.
Well, I will say that there's this YouTube channel that I watch sometimes. And as a sort of comedic side thing, he had a sort of a smash up derby with Matchbox cars. And I eventually learned all those Matchbox cars as sort of characters in this. Like, he would just, literally, he had a ramp that he would put them down, and then they would all smash into each other, and whichever ones fell out, and there was, like, points, and I don't know. Anyway, but, you know, yeah, you sort of invest yourself in it enough, you...
Yeah, it's like watching a sport or watching, any sort of, you know...
Yeah, and I mean, the Matchbox thing is just, like, the thing that I could think of that was, like... the least inspiring thing where you'd be like, yeah, go ice cream truck or whatever.
Right? Well, it reminds me of the marble racing. I got into that during the pandemic. A la John Oliver. If you saw that, but yeah, and I was rooting for certain marbles.
Yeah. Sort of the same thing, I guess.
Yeah.
Anyway. So yeah, these are their marbles.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's that. And then aside from that, I like this episode because we get to see a little bit more of Emilico interacting with different people, especially the other Shadows members. She comes across Patrick, who is like in a box that just has like one like air hole air vent on the top of the box. And they just have a funny moment, a funny exchange where like clearly Emilico wants to break him out of the box just because she's sweet and
sunshine.
Know. Yeah. And he's like, I like their exchange because he essentially convinces her. Why not? Because he's waiting. At first he's like, you know, no, like, you know, you're supposed to go save, you know, your, you know, Kate, you know, you're the person you're responsible for. But she's just so sweet and caring that he has to, you know, come out with the real truth of like, no, I want to,
he has to convince her not to save him.
Yes.
Essentially.
Yeah. Yeah. And he finally gets to the kernel of the truth, I think, which is he wants his, I forget the name of his doll, but he wants, you know, his doll to,
Patrick.
Cause there's John and Sean.
John and Sean. Those ones rhyme, right?
Yeah. But Patrick, I'm not sure of the other one.
I can find it. I think. Yes.
Well, while you look for that. I guess I'll wait. More editing.
Ricky?
Okay, that is a name of one of them. So I'll take it.
Is that right, though?
Yeah, I'll take it. Well, Patrick, Ricky, maybe.
Oh, yeah.
Something there.
Yeah.
I hadn't thought about
it. Because, I mean, dolls, now. we've got Emilico, I mean, Barbie, Edward, Rom, Lou, Mia?
I'm not sure about Mia.
Ricky. It's got to be Ricky.
I think
that's
you're
the
right
only
about
other
that.
One.
Yeah. So yeah, he, you know, he convinces her, cause she's not easily, you know, she's so like gung ho with like what she thinks is right, which is, you know, usually pretty solid as far as like right and wrong go. But yeah, he convinces her like, okay, that's a fair point. And then she starts sending down individual orange slices.
Yeah.
And the first one, like he gets like juice on his face and like hits him in the head. But he starts eating them, and she sends, like, a flower down for him to look at. It's just very sweet, and then she, like, hugs the box, and, like, he can tell what she's doing. And
yeah, there's, like, sort of a moment where he's putting his hand against the side of the box, and, like, yeah.
Yeah.
Seems like they have a connection through the box somehow.
Yeah, and something, like, when he put his hand out, like, she wasn't aware of that. He gave no, indication that he was reciprocating it.
Mm.
But I like that exchange, because, like, clearly Emilico doesn't, not that she doesn't care, but she's, you know, she's just so pure and happy that she, you know, her pride is not really on the line ever. But his is. And so he kind of silently reciprocates and kind of plays into his character where it's, I don't know how, you know, important of a character he is, but I just like that little moment of, you know, clearly showing their different personalities.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the orange slices were cute. And then other than that, I mean, they, Emilico and Sean,
Sean
doll,
John.
and then there's the other, it's the three, which I feel like I called this, when they first were like cleaning together, you know, they became, you know, they had to have night duty together.
Oh yeah.
I don't remember the other girl's name.
Rom.
Rom.
They call her Rom.
Rom.
I think,
yeah.
Rom.
Yeah. That's right. And she's the one that's kind of the silent type that like talks with her pinky.
Less so now, but
yeah. Yeah. That did. Yeah. She's coming. I guess similar to Kokomo in Super Cub. She's coming out of her
Coming out of her shell.
And so yeah, it was like a you know, a sweet reunion of those three. And then they intercept Sean. They find him. He's just like hanging out in a tree, and he's filthy. His clothes are filthy with soot.
Oh yeah, that's right.
And in the previous episode, he had broken out of his box with, you know, just releasing a bunch of soot
using his soot magic powers or whatever.
Right? Yeah. And he had found Kate, and he had
proposed to her.
Yeah. And then we learn, which is a funny exchange too, but then we learn in this episode that like he was just nervous and he didn't intend to do that. It was kind of fun to see him like, you know, just freaking out about that. Whereas at the moment, in the moment of talking to Kate, he was, you know, seemed pretty sure of himself, but
yeah. And like we like Sean too. So therefore we kind of like John by, association.
Yes.
I think.
Yeah.
I think John is more likable than Sean really, but, I don't know. Like Sean's kind of come around. He was kind of a jerk at first.
Yeah. He was just kind of like, not really, I don't know. It seems like Emilico kind of brought him out of his like funk, like a little bit where
They were on night duty, he was just like, ugh.
Yeah.
This is stupid. You're stupid. Why are you all sunshiny all the time? Ugh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then similarly with in this episode with John, John is after they kind of, you know, they're talking about like cleaning his clothes and stuff because he's filthy and you know, your clothes have to be clean.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like your doll's face has to be unscathed and the Shadows member clothes have to be clean.
Yes.
Which is okay. I can accept that.
Gotta have rules.
Yeah, there you go. but they're rules that they did not know about at the start, which is, you know, a bit insidious, I suppose. But
the dolls were told about it, but the
but not till they got to the labyrinth. Yeah.
Oh right. Yeah.
But yeah. Anyway, so after all that, they're talking about the clothes and stuff and what they could do with that. John is talking to Emilico and he's kind of just like analyzing her and it seemed like, you know, like most people, he was annoyed by her sunshininess. But then because of his connection with Kate now and his interest in her, he you know, in the moment, sees Emilico in a better light, you know, in a more, you know, and he kind of like, it's like, oh, there must be something to this, you know, demeanor that you have. Something that relates to Kate. And
right.
So
he's sort of complimenting Kate through Emilico, basically saying that, oh, if she has a doll like you, she must be really great.
Yeah.
Sort of. Right?
Yeah. And so, and in the process, kind of by extension, accepting her on a certain level of like, you know, cause that, like when the debut first started, like she was getting a lot of shit, you know, from all the other, Shadows members. Yeah. And dolls probably. But, so I like that. It kind of, that plus like Emilico's interaction with Patrick, I thought really just sort of gave a little more depth to these different Shadows characters, but then also, you know, to Emilico. Because I said it before too, like when the show first starts, we're just in her world, you know, like we see Kate and stuff, but it's just like, oh, this is going to be a happy, fun show, you know, where she just cleans up soot. but it was all in, you know, I believe now is all in service to cement her character, and now we're seeing her interact with other people, and it doesn't always go, you know, in a pleasant, you know, doesn't unfold pleasantly always, but she's steadfast, and I don't know, I like a character like that. This is very sweet, earnest, and unbudgingly so. Mm. But I don't know.
She is sunshine.
She is. What did you think of this episode?
So I guess the only other thing I really had that was that, so the Elder Shadows, some of them, I don't remember which ones for sure, but very early on in the show say, oh, those are the two that are going to fail or something like that. When, was it Rum and Emilico were traveling together and they were saying those two had to,
were going
to fail? Like as if it was something that was sort of predetermined or something.
Yeah.
I don't know if they were just being negative or predictive or something like that. Or if it was already predetermined.
So. Well, then Edward, and I think last week's episode, made some comment about, you know, how he doesn't like Kate and like is, you know, it seemed like he was confident that she would fail.
Yeah.
So I wonder if it relates to that, if it's all just Kate and Emilico or if Rum and her, I forget the name of her shadow, but yeah, I don't know. It's a good question. Like, cause I agree with you. It definitely seems like there's something, I mean, of course with this show, there's more going on, you know, than we know, More to be revealed. But yeah, is it like a predetermined thing? That's a good question.
Shirley, you must remember her name.
Don't call me Shirley.
No, her name's Shirley.
Okay, so Shirley and Rum, Patrick and Rum. And Ricky, Kate and Emilico, Sean and John.
Is that like an alcohol reference? Like a Shirley Temple is a non-alcoholic beverage. Rum is an alcoholic beverage.
That's true.
I'm trying to figure out like what that relation is there.
They all have some sort of connection, except Kate and Emilico.
Yeah, Kate and Emilico is like, completely sort of separate. But yeah, I don't know. Sorry, you were saying something before I said Shirley.
Oh, no, you're fine. I was just kind of... taking in what you said, like about, you know, about it being predetermined, like it's an interesting.
It was unclear. It was just the way that it said it sounded like it was almost, but I don't know if they were just being, again, pessimistic or something like that. Like, oh, those two are definitely going to fail or something.
Or maybe going back to the sports analogy of like, they have seen, you know, hundreds of these debuts and they've read, you know, they've read all the charts, you know, all the files on all these people and are just calling it maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe it's, you know, in their pool, they have those two have to fail. So they're saying those two are going to fail.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. And then later there's more of the stuff with the Elder Shadows where two of them are sort of saying, oh, well, if I were Ricky, I would do this. Oh, if I were her, I would do this. And I don't know. They seem like kind of jerks. And then one of the other ones says, yeah, well, you're not them because you suck. Basically.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which I liked. It was fun.
Which is good. Yeah. It shows that they're not all like, you know.
They're not all jerks like that.
Yeah. And they're not all like of one mind or like all agree, you know. So it's,
yeah,
you know,
that's true.
Something will probably play out with them, you know, clashing or them being divided over the results of this debut or something. I don't know. Like,
yeah. Yeah. We've got a while left, I think. Is this one of the ones that's 24? I don't remember.
Yeah. I don't remember. I hope so. I give this a strong 7. I really like this episode.
Yeah.
And so it's like one of those, like, it just keeps, getting me more invested and interested in what's going on.
Yeah. It's not like super, super high, superb or anything like that, but it's really good. It's good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I'm at a 7 on this one too.
Mm.
But anyway, I guess that probably does it for us. If you have any comments related to anything that we've said during this episode or any other episode, you can find us on all the social medias at Unlike Anime. That's UmlikeAnime. Facebook, Twitter, etc. You know all these things. I say it 1,000 times. Oh, we got a new patron. Did you see that?
We did?
Yeah, my buddy Blaine.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so Blaine has patronized us. That
cool.
Doesn't sound right, but...
Well, shout out to Blaine. That's awesome.
Yeah. Thank you so much for that. And yeah, if you want to become a patron, we are on Patreon at patreon.com/umlikeanime. Same way I just spelled it a minute ago. Every little bit helps. I actually just set up a new goal. I was telling George earlier. It's not really a goal as much as a benchmark. We each spend about 5 hours a week producing this podcast, which is 10 hours a week total, and then over 4 weeks per month, it would be about $290 if we were getting paid the federal minimum wage, which is $7.25. I honestly can't even remember the last time I got paid that much or less. It's been since the early 2000s.
Yeah,
crazy.
It's almost as bad as wait staff wages.
Yeah. I think in a lot of states, like, well, the state that we're in, the minimum wage is nearly double the federal minimum wage. And I think wait staff wage is higher than the federal minimum wage in this state.
Wow.
Anyway, it doesn't matter. It's kind of off topic. But yeah, we are on Patreon. Our most immediate goal is if we get to $50 a month, we will start producing video of our podcasts. We're considering doing like maybe a live stream of the video while we're recording. Can't necessarily vouch for, you know, the quality of the content that you will receive, but yeah, we've got Blaine. I assume R. Albert is coming back at some point, he has said.
Yes.
which puts us what, 1/5 of the way to that goal. So really we just need like 4 more. Am I doing that math right? I can't do math.
Yeah.
8 more?
Well, we're not getting paid, so the math is going to be bad.
We need a number more than what we currently have.
Yeah.
And then we can start, you know, producing more, more interesting content. Someone on YouTube asked if we streamed the content before we released it and stuff like that. And I would love to do that. It's just a matter of getting the equipment together and stuff like that. And yeah, we've already invested a fair amount of our own money in this. And I've talked about this too long because I don't want to sound like I'm begging for money. But thank you so much for listening. Don't forget, we are doing 2 podcasts a week now. So there's the Wednesday episode. There's the Sunday episode. There is no Friday. So we've just sort of recombined them in a way to, you know, cut it down to 2 episodes per week. Although this one is probably longer than our previous Wednesday episodes have been because they've been getting shorter and shorter.
And now they're even longer.
And now they're longer again. But you know, overall, it's the same number of hours every week. It's just maybe a little more difficult to listen to it in this long form. I don't know. If there's only certain shows that you want to listen to on YouTube, I try and put the time codes so that you can skip to whatever show you want to listen to. I don't get them up immediately, but I try and get them up within a couple days of the episode's release. Anyway, I've yammered on enough. I am Tony, the yammering one, and this is my co-host and friend for life, Mr. George.
I'm the stammering one.
Are you the I'm the yammering one, you're the stammering one?
Yes.
All right. That's what we're going to do from now on. Again, thanks, and we'll see you in, I think, 4 days, right?
Yes. Memorial Day weekend.
That's right. Yeah. Right smack dab in the middle of Memorial Day weekend.
So we'll see you then. Some of the best shows in that episode.
And this episode, too.
I just said some.
Stop putting down my spider show.
I haven't seen it. I can't really weigh in.
It's the best show this season.
My 2 favorite shows of the season are in Sunday's episode.
I see.
So this is where I'm coming.
That's true. I enjoy a lot of them, too, on the next episode. But I love Spider very much, so.
Yes.
All right. Yammering done. Goodbye. Thank you.
Bye.